is the value in the word. That the younger you was writing, golden insights to the world, or the demons you were fighting, grab an older piece of work, grab a seat, let's talk it through, be an open book, let's take a look at paragraphs lost, that's what we do.
You're listening to Paragraphs Lost, a show where writers dig up the work from their early teens. You know, the stuff that made their parents proud enough to keep in the attic, or the fanfiction that lay forgotten on forums, brimming with ambition and unfortunately lost to the world. Each week, our guests pick a story from those years, read them aloud, and learn to forgive themselves for being 13 years old. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Paragraphs Lost. Today we have Brianna Hare. How are you doing today, Brianna?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you for joining us. So tell me, what did you bring to read today?
I brought, it's a little snippet from a very first story that I wrote. It's called The Diamond Sword. Very creative name.
Mm-hmm. And why did you write this?
I just wrote it. It started out as like a school project. We had to write a little story. Of course, by little I wrote an entire novel, so.
Uh-huh. And, so what was the assignment? Was it just, like, write any story you wanted?
Yeah, it was just write, you know, it was, we got to pick any sort of subject we wanted, and just to write a little creative thing about it. It was supposed to be, I think, only a couple of pages, but obviously I didn't stick to that rule.
Uh-huh. So you sent me about 8 pages. How much longer was this story?
It actually was ended up being a trilogy.
Oh my goodness.
I know, right? Like, supposed to write 5 pages, end up writing 3 books.
Yeah. So three whole books then. And was this over the next couple of years that you were writing this?
Yeah, I wrote it from when I was 9 till I was, like, 13 or something like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So this is the start of a saga, and perhaps,
yeah,
you know, one day we'll get to see it. Did you keep writing after this?
Oh, yeah. I have, I think I wrote at least 3 of the full-length novels since then. I have a dozen poetry, and I have countless short stories and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Blog entries and articles, and have finally have a full of stuff.
Right. So, tell me about yourself at 9 or 10 or whenever it was that you started writing this.
Oh, I was like the kind of kid that would go up to strangers and be like, "Hi, my name is Brianna. I have like 7 siblings," and just go down my life story and charming at that age.
So sharing, much longer stories than you were invited to share was already a habit when you
No, definitely. Like, a lot of my parents being like, "Okay, you don't need to tell them everything. Okay, yeah, bye."
So, you said that this was, like, the first major thing that you were writing. Do you remember the process of writing this? Do you remember sort of, like, discovering just the fun of it?
Yeah, like, as I said, before the show started, it started out with just a little assignment that I had to do for school. So,
mm-hmm.
And then just from doing it, I just was like, "Oh, you know what? This is actually really fun," and just haven't stopped since.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned to me before we started recording that a lot of this was based on what you were watching at the time, which was anime, correct?
Yeah, and also there's actually, when I talk about this with other people, they always talk about, when they ask me what my first project was, it's, when I describe it, it's like Lord of the Rings with angsty teenagers, but with like a Japanese twist to it.
What do you consider to be a Japanese twist?
Just the way that the fight scenes kind of play along, you can definitely tell by just, I'm trying to think of a good example. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen Shamrock Shampoo.
Oh, yes.
But the kind of, that kind of stuff, like, there's, like, a lot of, the movements of it is very fluid and very, like, kind of martial arts style.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah.
What,
they have a whole...
What was it about kind of anime or even, like, Samurai Champloo that drew you?
It's just, usually their ideas are really creative.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, like, especially with the fantasy genre, I found that with, like, European, even American works, it's very, like, oh, elves in the woods, like, roaming around. But, like, Japanese stories usually have, you know, like, foxes that can transform, and there's more to it. There's a lot more lore that they have because the history with their mythology goes a lot deeper than our civilization does.
And certainly, like, I think in Western culture, Tolkien sort of codified what fantasy was, and we haven't really broken out of that, I think, as fantasy writers. You know, writing that same European style with those same ideas. But I think you're right when you go over and you look at animes, even modern ones, they're still, like, they're based on traditions, but there are new ideas being presented in each and every one, which is always really cool. Anyway, so what was this that you said this was titled the Diamond Sword? Are you ready to start reading it?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Cool.
Let me get it up here real quick. So to give some backstory kind of to the scene, it's two of the characters, because the story has, I believe it's like seven main characters. There's kind of an eighth one that's kind of like the Gandalf of the group. He's like a 17-year-old cool guy. So two of the characters broke off and they came across the antagonist of the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is kind of the beginning of that fight when they kind of get past the dialogue of, hey, this guy's a bad dude, we should fight.
Uh-huh. I have to investigate a little bit more because you just described a 17-year-old cool dude Gandalf. which... I don't think anybody has ever described Gandalf as such, but I take it he's sort of the wizened, I guess is the appropriate word, but like a guide for the characters.
Yeah, so most of the main characters are all like, because obviously I was nine, so like to me, like teenagers are like, oh, that's super cool. So I had a bunch of like that. All the main characters are, like, 13, 14.
Mm-hmm.
And they go on this epic quest. And then I started writing. I was like, oh, I need someone that can, you know, drive.
So they had to be 18. Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah, so one of the characters' cousins is, he's a 17-year-old that drives them everywhere to their adventures.
I do enjoy remembering 9-year-old, like, 13 and 14 being the height of cool.
And yeah, like... so, like, yeah, they were basically, like, it's like, oh, I'm gonna write them super cool, so they're gonna be, like, 13.
And that 18-year-old Gandalf's just gonna feel lucky to hang out with
her. Oh, yeah, so, like, I don't think there's any examples of him that I sent you, but he's just, like, at one point, that, like, his car broke down, and he's trying to wrangle all these little kids. You know, that I'm adult, they're definitely little kids.
Uh-huh.
And so he's just, like, trying to be cool and trying to, like, wrangle them. He's like, oh, like, yeah, I'll go buy some, like, soda pops. And they're like, oh, you're going to let us drink soda, but it's only, like, 9 p.m. And, like, he's like, oh, you know, like.
No, it sounds like you were a wild rule breaker.
No. Never mind that I have, like, 30-year-olds fighting for swords and, you know, all that.
So just curious, before we get into the context of the story, what was, like, the general overplot of the trilogy?
Oh, so there is, as I said, there were seven kids who they discovered one day that they had this mysterious mark that appeared on various parts of their body. And they found out that they're actually... directly descendants of these knights
mm-hmm.
who protected this kingdom from, and the king in this, you know, distant, I think I did, like, and that was, like, 2,000 years in the past or something like that. Mm-hmm. The king in this kingdom went kind of crazy and got a wizard to enchant the sword. And with this enchanted sword, it basically brought out, like, bad parts of humanity. So the whole idea was that he would use the sword to control other kingdoms. But once, you know, after he got killed, they tried to seal away the sword because anyone that came direct in contact with it would basically be possessed and be driven mad to destroy basically everything around them.
Mm-hmm. On account of the evil.
Yeah, because, you know, just for the sake of just being evil.
Right, right.
Because, you know, now you're all plotting.
Well, yeah. You don't want to overcomplicate these things either, especially for your first novel.
Yeah. So then, with these kids, with the symbols shining, meaning that there was someone who had come in contact with the sword. So they're supposed to go and find the sword, and if they could try to destroy it, they kind of along the way found a kind of secret way to destroy it without unleashing the evil that was inside of it.
Gotcha.
So okay. That's kind of why they're kind of traveling. Along the way, they came across, like, there's a whole bunch of, like, tests that they had to go through, and they came across people who had come in contact with the sword and was basically just kind of driven crazy because of seeing something that was filled with pure evil.
Right, right. The mini-bosses on the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah, because you have to have mini-bosses in everything you do.
Mm-hmm. So we have two characters in this scene, Jessica and Dan. You said one of them was the villain?
Yeah, so there's three. So there's Jessica, who's one of the main characters.
Mm-hmm.
Her friend Jenna is somewhere along down there. And then Dan is the antagonist in the scene.
Mm-hmm. And were these characters just invented, or were these like based on characters you knew or people you knew?
I think there are definitely some traits that are from people that I knew. But for the most part, I try to be pretty original because
mm-hmm.
I guess that was one of the things when I did the assignment, they wanted us to try to come up with original characters. So they wanted us, we did some writing exercises that was just trying to think of a brand new person, basically.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right, so why don't we start reading?
Okay. Jessica and Dan stood there, just stared at each other as the midday sun beamed down on them. The wind blew across the grass, making the whole field hum and scream, a crowd cheering during a match. Jessica was the first one to move, with impressive speed as she swung a thin, small sword with all of her might, a downward slash towards the older boy. But Dan was just as quick, as the loud screech of metal on metal, scraping against each other, echoed through the space. He grinned the most unsettling way, a cat playing with a mouse before he swallowed it whole, and Jenna was helplessly watching, knowing what laid heavily in their minds and heart. So something I want to get into before I continue reading this.
Oh, yes, please do.
Is that Jenna and Jessica, out of the seven kids, Jenna is designated the leader from just her bloodline,
mm-hmm.
and Jessica being the second in command. They actually can read people's minds, and they can know what lays in their hearts.
Okay.
It's not all the time, it's basically just during, like, you know, if someone was extremely happy, they'd be able to tell from just what they were feeling and be able to read people's minds that way.
I see. When I'd read this line, when you'd send it to me, I thought this was just like, you know, there was just larger context that both of them had. I didn't realize this was a power that they had.
It's like a literal thing.
Mm-hmm. I like that at 9 you were already pretty aware of, like, needing sensory details in these things. Like, just the sounds that you have, like the screech of metal on metal. I particularly like the screaming grass.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's some field. Pretty cool.
Yeah, Well, because I think because I lived, at this point, I kind of lived in the country, so I think I was trying more to get, like, the way that, like, long grass kind of rubs against each other. I think I was interpreting that as I'm literally screaming, but...
No, it's very cool. I just think that that's quite remarkable at 9, so...
I totally lost my place, sorry. I just want to talk. Dan said, so even and monotone. I would love to crack open that head of yours. You're a monster. Jessica threw all of her weight into the clashing blades, pushing the old Athena back, a step back. What would we talk about anyway? Oh, plenty. I know all about your mind reading. Dan regained his footing and went in for another strike, one that was met with a block. Knowing that everyone's anger and grief, he harshly shoved Jessica, a hard punch to her nose as she fell to the ground.
Oof.
It must be glorious to know what their fears are, to feel their pain in real time, he added, towering over her. How do you know about that? Jessica hissed, blood pouring from her nose. People talk. Do you think that with a whole town that knew something like that, that they wouldn't let it travel down the rat hole? Jessica scrambled to her feet, throwing all of her weight into a strike as she clashed their blades again. A loud thud and a metal screech was the only thing that happened. Jessica, he's trying to get you all worked up, shouted Jenna. I got this, Jenna, Jessica snaps. I don't always need you to come storming in and helping me. Oh, things getting a little heated between you and your friend? Dan looked between the girls. Can you read her anger? Can you see the hate that lies in her heart? Tell me all about it.
This
Dan
is a...
gave Sorry. Another sickening scream.
This is taking quite a Palpatine turn.
I will say, kind of gets a little dark later on, like, into this little snippet. It was recently, all this stuff was just kind of locked away in storage, and I came across it and I was digging through it, and kind of, like, I remembered writing it, but I wrote it when I was 9 and kind of didn't. So I was reading through some of my old works, and in this whole entire universe, it's just, like, a lot of heavy, dark stuff that you wouldn't expect a 9-year-old to write.
Uh-huh.
That I clearly just had no context for. I was just like, oh, this sounds cool as I'm typing away on, like, my dad's computer, because I was too young to have my own at the time.
Well, that was, like, before having multiple computers in a house was very common.
Yeah.
When you say dark stuff, I'm sure it gets there, and I remember reading your Twitter post that attracted me to the story, but... It's just funny to like have your 9-year-old self like do that, but also think like soda pop and 14-year-olds. It's like
yeah. So again, it's not as a snippet, but reading what inspired me to write the Twitter post that you're referencing actually was that I was reading a snippet later on in the series, and they come across this wall that can ambiently talk, like it talks to them through like their mind. And the wall subtext asks for a human sacrifice in order for them to open the wall. There's like a gate with a door, and it literally just implies that it wants a human sacrifice. So then the kids are like, "How about not? And we'll just give you like some of our blood from each of us." And the wall's like, "Meh, I guess that'll do." And it was just like, I think like the snippet was really like, it implied that I wanted a human sacrifice, and at the same, like, all at the same time, it wasn't even that I thought about it, like, Jenna, the leader, was like, I'll give you some of my blood, will that do?
They didn't turn on each other instantly. I do like that the wall was reasonable about it. It's like, oh, all right.
Yeah, I guess.
Blood's pretty good.
I guess I could take some blood. I guess it doesn't have to be an entire body.
Well, it's a damn decent wall, I gotta say. All right, we can continue.
Shut up. another big swing by Jessica, but it was so powerful that it knocked back Dan. You don't understand what it's like to wake up and feel everyone's feelings, every bad day, every hateful thing. It's tiring to know what everyone around you thinks about you. The tears streamed down Jessica's face. Ah, right. You rather feel things like happiness, love, compassion. I forgot that people felt such things. Dan's face twisted into itself. I never understood why people like these things. Then again, I've never felt them, so I guess I wouldn't know.
Dan, that's so sad.
I know, right? Like, I think, yeah, especially because, like, they say all the, I reference all the teen and all the boy, but, again, they're only 13, so, like, Dan's probably only, I don't remember, I have notes somewhere about it. He's probably only, like, at most his late teens.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, that's a very late teen thing to say.
Yeah, I know, right? Imagine, like, the scene kid has.
I forget that people felt such things. It's going to be okay, Dan. We're going to get you some MyChem.
Play some Black Parade.
Uh-huh, yeah. That's good stuff.
Well, what? Jessica, I feel the teen. What does that even mean? Jessica, have you been reading his mind and heart? Jenna said to her friend. Yeah, Jessica, you should listen to your friend more. Jenna has the right idea. As for what I mean, it means exactly how it sounds. I don't feel such silly things. I never have. See, that's why you and me are so much alike. The people around us fear because we're stronger than them. You, for being able to see what they fear the most, what causes them pain. And me, for not needing silly things that only hold humans back. And the brains to back up my drives and my ambitions. You and me are nothing alike, Jessica's voice cracks. Oh, but we are. We're outcasts from the day we were born. No one understood us. Not at all. No matter how hard we try, his voice was small and even, no hints of any kind of emotions, like stating a common fact. The only person that I thought was going to understand me ended up calling me a monster, a beast in human form. So, of course, he couldn't stick around. So this is where I start getting a little shocked as an adult that I kind of...
Yeah, where was this like coming this. From?
You know, I honestly don't know. I was a lucky, happy-go-lucky child. I wasn't, you know, there wasn't anything bad. I was kind of puppy around people. All rainbows and kittens.
How did your teacher or your parents or your friends react to this?
I mean, I definitely had a conversation of everything okay. He didn't.
Oh, no. Really?
Yeah.
Because of this story?
Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, yeah, once you read the next part of this, well, I feel definitely.
Oh, no. Okay, alright.
The air seemed to get heavy, like right before it rains. You don't mean Jenna's words trailed off, disappearing before they could fully form? Yes, I was only 10 when I lost my dear best friend. I didn't mean to. We got into a fight, and before I knew it, I was over him with a rock in my hand. I didn't go into the fact, but it's definitely very clear that Dan's not quite okay.
Well, no, it seems like Dan had some issues to work out, and it's not... Not okay, I guess, is one way to put.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what, like, the inspiration, because that must be something that I watched or read or something, because that kind of had some sort of psychopathic character that clearly lacks empathy of any sort.
Mm-hmm. Holds empathy in contempt.
I hope that I just didn't, like, as a 9-year-old, just, like, pull this out and was like, oh, yeah.
Independently right. Invented psychopathy at 9 years old.
I hope that there was something. I can't quite remember if there was any.
I mean, likely. I'm sure while you read the scene, you recognize it in some other things, particularly anime.
Yeah, there's definitely, the climax to the fight scene, again, you can definitely tell the Japanese flair that's Ooh. Added to the fight scene.
I'm looking forward to it.
You're a damn monster, Jessica did another powerful swing, one that would have cut off his arm if she didn't give a fearsome battle cry. Which, fair, like, probably shouldn't shout right before you attack.
Oh, sorry, it warmed him? I see.
Yeah, I'm gonna make sure that he knows that I'm gonna attack him right before I attack him.
It does make it seem a lot cooler, though, to be fair.
That's true. Dan barely stopped it with the edge of his blade. Ah, yes, what a familiar sight. The look of fear and anger. That's the look that my friend had in his eyes that day. How many have you killed? People? At the moment, only a small handful. My best friend, a girl from down the street. Some people I met around town looking for some fun. The newspaper said that my sleepy town wasn't safe anymore. My poor parents. They didn't live long enough to see what became of things. I wish I was the one who did it, but sadly, it was a drunk driver. Although I was the demise of my new parents, the ones that raised me alongside my only friend. They even let me sleep in his room. How stupid are they to let their son's killer sleep in his old bedroom?
That's a little unfair, Dan. I'm sure they didn't know.
Clearly,
although,
they didn't.
Although, I don't know. If they did, then yes. Pretty dumb of them.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of, if you couldn't guess from the beginning, the opening part, they're kind of, like, in the middle of a field. Mm-hmm. So I feel like if, you know, his adoptive parents or godparents or whatever did for them, if they had known, they probably wouldn't let him, you know, roam around random countrysides fighting
right
little kids.
Anyway, Dan's not thinking very clearly.
Jessica was shaking. Fear, anger, clearly both, tears and blood running down her face. How can you be like this? Oh, stop. Don't act so righteous. You know that power feels good. Having the power to stop a life, to choose whether someone lives or dies. You know that's great. You can't tell me that you wouldn't jump at a chance to play God. Everyone would. I'm just brave enough to grasp that power in my hand. A bold statement, by the way, from good old Dan here.
I guess so. I'm brave enough to grasp that power in my... is that really just his motivation? Like, he wants to kill because that makes him powerful.
As I said, like, I have notes bumping around for this because I read through all of it, and it definitely, because they reference it to, I reference it again in book 3 about Dan and his motivations, and it ended up being, again, like, as I explained with what the premise was for the dinosaur. It's just people just end up being, it just brings out the worst in people. It just makes them want to do bad things for the sake of doing bad things. And he had come across him, or like someone in his direct contact with him came across the sword, and it kind of just rubbed off on him in his early developmental phase.
Gotcha.
So he's just kind of the embodiment of everything that is wrong with why they had to go out and do something about this evil artifact.
Right. And is Jessica aware of this as to why Dan is the way he is, or is he just, like, coming out of nowhere for her?
He is literally coming out of nowhere. So the scene that I referenced with the soda pop, it's the car was broken down, and they're kind of just, like, waiting for a tow truck. And Jenna and Jessica felt, like, this presence, like, they felt Dan and his, for lack of a better term, his evilness. Like, they were able to feel, like, that he was wanting to do bad things.
A and dark presence. Yeah.
So they end up, like, running away from their group, and they came across Dan, who was just kind of traveling and puttering around, doing his own thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they're aware that there's something not right with him, but at this point in the story, they're not entirely sure exactly what's going on. Like, they want... through traveling and meeting people and talking with... There's a bunch of people who are descendants of other people involving the court that knew about the sword and people who, like, legends passed down. They kind of figure out more of the pieces of the puzzle of exactly what's going on. Like, it's literally... At the beginning of the story, their marks lit up. They're like, what is this? And... their parents like, oh, we kind of heard that this might happen at some point, but we just thought it was just something stupid our parents told us, so we just, I didn't tell you about it.
It's been 2,000 years, and this is the first group of parents that are like, it's probably nothing.
Yeah, well, because the story takes place in, it's like 1984, I believe is the year that the story takes place. So, like, they're basically like, oh, like, it's just a legend. Like, we don't, magic doesn't exist. We have technology, like.
That's so interesting that you chose to set a story in 1984 in, like, what was it, like, 1999?
Yeah. I just thought it was a cool year. I just was like, yeah, like, that sounds good.
I like Back to the Future. I could do that aesthetic.
Especially other Sith-bits. There's other ones that's, you know, you can see the influence by, like, Lord of the Rings, as I said. Like, it's just a group of people traveling, angsty teenagers being angsty.
Mm-hmm.
But there definitely is other, like, very clear inspiration and parallels that I drew.
Everybody's hair just got bigger in my head, by the way, for their descriptions.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, I don't know. It's, like, this part in the beginning where, like, they're, like, oh, we need a pack light. And one of the guys, because there's four boys and three girls. And then, like, the cool teen that's driving them around. And they're talking to the older teen, and he's, like, is bringing, like, six jars of hair gel, and they're like, if you run out, just buy some at the store. You don't need to bring, like, six tubs. And then, like, one of them's like, they're like, oh, I need to bring, like, my headbands and, like, leg warmers. Like, I clearly had, like, a very clear image of the 80s, and I was, like, running with it.
We buy our hair gel by the tub. It's gonna be a long journey.
I think there's one part where they're, like, trying to, like, sneak around in this old castle, and one of the characters makes fun of another character because they're wearing, like, neon. They're like, oh, yeah, like, that's what you need during our sneaky mission to switch, like, neon.
Very good. They're always playing Atari, right?
Yeah, there's definitely, they reference, like, old video games and stuff, because Book 3 actually takes place, 10 years later, and it involves, like, a different set of kids who are, like, siblings of, that were too young to travel with the other, with this group of kids.
Uh-huh.
So by then, like, I reference, like, a bunch of, like, Nintendo stuff, and, like, I'm a huge Nintendo fangirl, so I'm just like, oh, yeah, like, Nintendo, big video games. Oh, you can't take a gaming system. We're, like, basically camping. There's no power.
So it took you 3 years to come around to your actual childhood.
Yeah.
It's an interesting path. That's not how most writers get started, but very good, very good. Where are we?
Okay. Sorry, I was trying to... I keep forgetting where I am.
Yep.
Getting sidetracked.
I think I see you there right now, yeah.
Yeah, so it's after the line that just brave enough to grasp the power in my hands. No, you're just crazy enough to believe that you're a god. Jessica spat in his face. Jessica, you're letting him get under your skin. Don't listen to him, and just try to end this fight, or let me help, Jenna pleaded. Jenna, this is my fight. For the last time, don't get in the way. Well, that's not a very nice way to talk to your friend. I can take on both of you. It doesn't matter. I would love to see the life in Jenna's eyes slip away like sand in an hourglass. Dan's definitely got some pretty emo kid things to say.
He's poetic. He's taken a lot of time, but, you know, I appreciate anybody who is able to get metaphor into their speech. just casually.
Yeah, he's just like, sands in the hourglass, because I see him pulling out his, like, now I'm trying, because it's the 80s, so I don't know what the most emo kid band is back then.
Oh, probably, like, Tears for, no. Yeah, maybe Tears for Fears, right?
Yeah, so he pulls out his Tears for Fears notebook.
Yeah.
Poetry lines that he wrote.
God, I'd have to get into my 80s collection again, but I'm sure we'll come up with something. But yeah, let's say that for now. The Cure, were they back in the 80s or 90s? God, I'm getting old.
Yeah, I'm not sure when it's like maybe like early 90s.
Well, Dan's gonna listen to them when they do come out. He's gonna love them.
So after that line, Dan looks at Jenna. Jessica gets in between them. Don't you dare touch her, she growled. Dan looked at her, studying the younger girl. Why would you protect her? Why would you care so much about someone else? She doesn't care about you. Humans are built to only care about themselves. She would stab you in the back at the first chance she got. I tell you what, Dan dropped his sword, digging the tip into the ground. I'll give you guys a choice. I'll only kill one of you. Fight it out. I'll wait. The one who gets to live, the loser will be cut down like blades of grass. Yeah, again, he's definitely going for more of
like sands through the hourglass. Like the blades of grass.
I was definitely trying to get very creative with this.
No, I really appreciate it. And it's a consistent, like, character trait he has. Again, impressive at 9.
Yeah, and I think, you know how, like, in every bad guy in every movie just, like, says very, like, whimsical things to show that they're the bad guy? Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of what I'm going here. I'm like, oh, I'll make everything he says, like, metaphorical and kind of nonsense, so you can definitely tell that he's the bad guy.
I think they were trying to, like, that was them trying to make bad guys interesting, but I like that you're taking it as, like, well, that's what bad guys do. Fair enough. Turned it on its head a bit.
Yeah, he's getting into it. He's like, oh, you know what? I'm a bad guy, so I'm gonna have some monologues. I'm gonna have my heroes fight it out, and I'll make them choose who wants to die. And metaphorical speaking, yeah, got all the check marks.
Mm-hmm. All right. How will Jessica respond to this dilemma?
Jessica laughed. You're a damn idiot. I like to state that I thought it was so cool being able to get away with swearing. You're like, oh, I'll just say it like, damn, in hell. My parents won't notice.
Watch that be the reason why you were talked to the next day.
Nothing implying, like, you know, serial killers.
Yeah.
killing a kid with a rock.
My best friend.
You're a damn idiot. Do you really think that I would fight her? You're pretty cocky if you think I'm going to lose this. Jessica lifted the sword. See, I told you. You and me are nothing alike. I always have brains in my head. I would rather die for Jenna than fight her. Jessica got in a stance. Feet apart, knees bent. Hands grasping the handle of the sword. Eyes focused. And with steady hands, she ran forward. Dan braced himself, taking a step forward, waiting for the clash of blades and wills. But at the last second, Jessica's side flip, springing herself to Dan's left side. Dan reflex, swinging his sword to try and catch her. Jenna dropped and rolled on her knees, kicking Dan's leg as hard as she could. Dan stumbled back a couple of steps, trying to regain his footing, but before he could, Jessica sprung to her feet and drove her shoulder into Dan's chest, digging the edge of Dan's sword into her shoulder, but pushing through the pain, she knocked Dan over, sticking the landing with her knees on his body, sword to his throat. So definitely a little bit of flair with that little climax.
This is a really good action scene. I mean, honestly, like, you can see where everybody is. This stuff is not easy to write.
I mean, honestly, like, if I tried now, I'd probably be like, things, stuff happened, and maybe someone wins.
Right. It just seems like you had a very clear idea of a lot of things, like what the place looked like and what it sounded like and what these people were and what they were doing. And like for a first outing with writing, that's super impressive.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, not to toot my own horn, but I was reading for this, it's like, oh wow, go past me. Good job.
Yeah, you don't really expect that. And I mean, like, there's a lot of really corny stuff in here too, but like, for the most part, it's just, wow. I think they should have called your parents and just say, I think this is a thing she could do. Not, like, so much worried about, you know, I think she's going to murder her best friend with a rock.
I think it was more of a, like, are things okay at home? Or, you know, nothing bad happening?
It's always the talented ones we need to worry about.
Yeah, and again, like, you can definitely see, like, I added some extra flair that definitely... If you've ever watched any sort of, like, anime with, like, fighting scenes.
Yeah.
You can definitely tell, especially from that little thing, but that was definitely a very big inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
Also, go Jessica for being able to, like, side flip and, like, just quick and nimble.
Yeah, I'm very proud of her.
Yeah.
She's dealing with this all very well.
For someone who, like, you know, got punched in the face and kind of... all other attempts kind of failed prior to super cool, just sudden hero strength.
Yeah, now I want to ask, none of these people had any sort of combat training, right?
I mean, the kids kind of did. They kind of got, they had a, what was his name? Old Man Blake, I believe I called him. It was this guy who kind of, he was, he knew about the legends because he just, that's what he did for most of his life. He was like an archaeologist and like kind of studied mythology and stuff. So he came across that legend. So he knew that, like, he firmly believed that it was a thing. So he was just kind of biding his time and waiting. So then once the kids, you know, their marks awaken and they realize that they're supposed to do a bunch of stuff,
mm-hmm.
He approached them, he's like, hey, can I just, like, kind of show you how to, like, not get killed?
Uh-huh.
And, so they kind of got training in the sense that he, like, kind of showed them things, and it's like, we're gonna make it so then you can kind of maybe, you know, become across bad dudes, so you don't...
Right.
No die.
I'm hipster Aragorn, and I'm here to teach you how to fight.
Yeah, I think because he's, like, they call him old man, but I think he was only, like, 30. Like, he definitely wasn't, like...
No. No, they did not call him old man. I don't want to hear that.
I know, right? Like, now, like, I'm 27, I'm like, okay, can we not call him, like, old man? That's a little low blow there. But again, well, I was 9, so, like, 30-year-olds. I was like, whoa, they're so old. How are they still alive?
Like... Life expectancy was pretty low in the 80s, right? So maybe that's what it was.
Yeah, it's definitely, yeah, and I think he had a karate dojo, and, like, he, like, was fascinated with weapons and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think his dojo, ironically enough, was called Old Man Blake's Fighting Dojo.
Mm-hmm.
So at least he kind of embraced it.
Well, it's good to know that that career path is still open for me.
Yeah, teaching little 30-year-olds how to fight with swords.
Yeah. What to do if you come across a human sacrifice wall.
But, I mean, like, it seems they definitely do it gracefully. They're not, like, you know, kind of ask for blood, and they're like, oh, I mean, you can have some of ours, I guess.
if you need it. I don't know why a wall needs it, but you're asking for it, so I didn't.
So again, with the inspiration from Lord of the Rings, they come across this town, which, mind you, this takes place somewhere in America. Like, literally, a quote in the beginning of the story is somewhere in America. They come across, like, past the wall is cave, and in the cave is a fire pit, like kind of like a half-active volcano, because they're gonna, you know, Lord of the Rings style, toss the sword into the volcano and hope that that would end everything. somewhere in America, there's a cave with an active volcano.
Yeah, that is a little on the nose with the inspiration.
Definitely. I mean, like, you can kind of be like, oh yeah, just like a bunch of kids, like, traveling, like, sort of, but, yeah, at some point, one of the main cast, Jake, he kind of, like, throughout most of the deeper into the journey they go, he kind of just gets a little bit more crazy, definitely has moments where he snaps a little more, and, during, as I said, they each have, like, some sort of test that they come across, which is they all, to get around the whole, well, what happens if, you know, if they had siblings? Like, why would they be the ones that were chosen? I decided to do a loophole where they experience something that involves this sword, this evil entity that, or, like, something that came across from someone that they had some sort of interaction, which is why they were chosen, rather than say, like, because one of the characters has an older sister and she's just not a part of it at all. So to get around that loophole of being like, well, why wasn't she chosen, rather than...
Right.
So during Jake's test, they basically... So, like, every test of them coming to terms with whatever happened that made us a their picks. And he kind of goes bananas, and they definitely have to stop him from, like, I think he was shoving a kid over a bridge when they finally stopped him. I was like, dude, you need to chill.
You gotta stop doing this.
He's definitely the emo kid of the group, too. Uh-huh. He definitely has moments where he's just kind of sitting off by himself. They're like, you okay, Jake? What's up, buddy?
He's just sensitive, all right? I was that kid. I was the kid who's off on my own, you know, staring into a well, pushing a kid off a bridge. I needed space. I get you, Jake.
I mean, it's definitely, like, I made it a very big point, because throughout the entire story, it's like kind of like Jenna and Jake are kind of like getting kind of cuddly. And then, like, oh, but no, they definitely don't get together. Like, made it a point to basically have them, like, cuddle all the time and be like, oh, no, like, getting together is gross. Cooties, no.
Your 9-year-old did show through in some ways. It's cuddle.
Yeah, I think that's actually a direct line where Jake is like, oh, it's just cooties. Like, definitely not dating her.
Again. 13-year-olds, coolest age group.
That's true.
So where were we?
Very stylistic fight.
Yep.
Jessica on Dan with a knees on his body. Kind of sword to throat, being like, clearly I win.
Uh-huh.
She's like, see, Dan? What not Dan like? What do you think of her weakness? I use my feelings of love for my friends to push myself. So this is where we get to the very, very cheese. And I apologize, because it's a very, like, powered friendship. Yeah.
I love when a moral argument is always decided by a fight. Like, you know what I mean? Like, well, I won because I was morally right.
Yeah, clearly not because I, like, outdid you. It was just because of power of love that I won.
For my friends.
For my friends, yeah. Like, yeah. You threatened her, so I am clearly going to win this fight.
you get that little +5 to your sword fighting ability from friendship.
That's true. And then, like, you roll a D8 and add find a modifier to it.
Yeah. That's how you do it.
So, using my feelings of love for my friends to push myself, Jessica breathed. Even if it means hurting myself, even if it means losing my life, I will always do what I need to do to fight and protect humanity, no matter what. So, again, like, very morally driven, like, I'm going to fight for everyone, and I'm going to use the power of love to win every fight, because I'm a hero.
It's always good when your protagonist recognizes themselves.
That's true, yeah. Like, very clearly knows that they're the hero. Dan laughed weakly. What a stupid ideal. Killing yourself for the person who doesn't give a crap about you. Give it up, Dan. Jenna joined them. Now turn yourself in, repent for your sins, and face the consequences of your crime. I like to state that Jenna's also kind of the same kind of hero that uses speech that's definitely older than she is. Very, like, repent for your sins.
Face the consequences for your crimes. But she's, like, 13, so it's like...
Yeah. Little squeaky 13-year-old in the 80s. What? Like, big hairs and...
Why is no one taking me seriously?
And she's also the kind of hero that, like, resents the fact that she's a hero. So, like, she's the leader of the group. So a lot of times they're like, well, like, the seven of them, so minus the driver, doesn't have any sort of input because he's the driver. They're like, okay, like, three against three, like, your vote wins. And she resents that fact throughout most of the story. Is basically just like, I don't want responsibility for this. Someone else picks. But then says things like that. That's like, I'm clearly in charge, and I'm the badass of the story. So after that line, it cuts to Dan, just staring at the sky, a still deadness to them, like there wasn't anything going on behind them. Probably mean his eyes. Definitely did not reference eyes in that sentence at all, but...
You know, I didn't notice it until you pointed out, but it could have been a still deadness to all three of them.
That's true. I mean, yeah.
That's the most charitable, I guess, I could read that.
It's just like a weird thing, being like, oh, look at the sky, and it's like a deadness to them.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, I don't know where I was going with that, but mine, so...
Well, I think the next line might clear it up to it.
Yeah. He sat up with such force and speed that it pushed Jessica off of him. No, 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 no! Dan held his head as he screamed. No, you can't do this. You can't make me. And before either girls could react, he grabbed his sword and plunged it into his stomach before falling over, blood pooling to the ground, turning the green grass into a red pool. The girls screamed and ran for help.
That's where we're closing off today.
That's the end of the chapter with that.
Was this the end of what you turned in?
Yeah, that was the end of what I turned in, yeah. So,
okay, I get it now.
Yeah, so that's definitely, because he ends up dying, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Just a flesh wound, as they say.
Yeah, plunging a sword deep into his stomach. And as I said, book three references it again. So there's a group of four kids who are the youngest siblings of most of the people and part of the group. And they found out, you know, because the main cast never really found out what Dan's motivations were, like why he was that way. And it wasn't until this other group ends up visiting Dan's gravesite that they realize that he was affected by the evil force that was, you know, in the sword. Mm-hmm. And so, because I read through all three novels.
Wow.
They wrote. It's quite a treat. And so I got to that part, and it references this last bit, being like, it wasn't Dan saying, like, no, you guys can't make me, like, turn myself in. It was more that the evil power in the sword was telling Dan to basically kill himself, and he was trying to fight back. I was trying to tell, like, this, the other evil part of him that he didn't want to do it. And so I read that, and I was like, oh, okay. I'm glad that even my 9-year-old self, because I had it all plot. I still have my plot books bumping around, and that was something that I wanted for the scene, was to be that Dan didn't want to do it. It was just basically evil presence.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounded like you had a very clear vision for this story. So you mentioned you went back and you read all three novels that you finished, like, what, 20 years ago? No, 10 years ago, I suppose?
Yeah, I think that it was the last piece that I had was dated from when I was around 13. So, yeah, I'm, like, 27 now, so, like, 14 years ago or something like that.
What do you notice about this when you're reading it that, like, what's the same about your writing, and what do you think has changed?
There's definitely a lot. I definitely go out. There's definitely a very specific style in here. As we said, there's, like, definitely some visual ones that I lean more towards characters in my current writing, what my characters are doing and what they're, you know, if they're, like, fidgeting, if they're doing that, more than a kind of scenery. Something that I still do, like, is I definitely still have evil monologues, because why not? No, but I definitely pay a lot of attention still to lines. Like, every little thing that is done and said clearly has a purpose and a reference that I'm going to kind of loop together to the end of the story. To a point of just, like, a very detailed, like, every, even, like, a specific word choice is done for a reason. And I also still kind of do the, my characters will talk in kind of, like, a poetic, kind of metaphorical way. Like, they'll, like, references being, like, oh, like, sands in an hourglass, like, watching someone, like, slowly die that way, or, like, so, yeah, so there's definitely stuff that I still do in my writing today, like that. But it's definitely a little bit more style-line-wise. It's, my style now is completely different from this.
A little smoother, I expect.
Yeah, definitely a little bit more smooth, definitely a little bit more, because this is very, it's kind of more dialogue-heavy and kind of more, like, you are getting the information out of the dialogue. This is also told in, like, a third person, and most of my books nowadays are told in a first person. Okay. I just find it a little bit easier. So this is a little bit more, I know a little bit more going on with characters in this story, because my focus isn't as narrow as you get with first person.
Oh, yeah, when you only have to really worry about point of view and what one person is thinking and how one person sees things, that can definitely help, especially in, I think, in fantasy, where so much has to be explained, and you don't need to worry about, like, what the people who know things, what their perspective of this is, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, like, I have to get through a loophole of, like, I wanted Dan to be able to taunt Jessica when I was originally writing this scene. So, like, in my previous notes, I'm like, does he also read minds? And then I kind of crossed that off, and I was like, does he just, like, know? Because part of, like, Jessica's backstory, she came from a small town that found out that she could, like, read minds, basically, and, like, the whole town was, like, terrified of this small child, because they're like, well, we can't, like, our minds aren't safe. So I was like, oh, well, like, I mean, obviously, like, it'd be really weird if just it stayed in the small town. So, like, I definitely had to work around how I wanted Dan to be able to interact with Jessica, but didn't know initially when I was first plotting and writing the scene. I had to be like, well, he can't just, like, know this. So I was very focused on Dan's motivations and how he knew and perceived everything. More so than if I were to write it something like this in first person now, I obviously wouldn't care as much about, like, I'd be more focused on what my character's thinking and feeling rather than the aesthetics around them.
Yeah, yeah, no, I get that definitely. did you, after you were talked to by the teacher, did you, did that encourage you to try to scale back, like, the dark elements of your story, or was that more like, well, I'm going to do more of this, it's cool?
I was going to say, it definitely, if anything, encouraged it more, because I was like, oh, like, they think that it's something bad, like, definitely should do it more.
Well, I'm glad you got that impulse. That's a, I believe, like, that all artists should have some hint of rebellion, yeah, to what they're doing. Yeah,
like, oh, they want to censor me? Yeah, how about we do it more?
Human sacrifice wall.
Yeah, it's such a small part, too, in that, like, it's literally, like, I don't know, covers, like, maybe a chapter. They come across this wall, it starts talking to them, they kind of just looked at each other and shrugged, like, okay, like, whatever, like, this wall's talking to us. I mean, again, like, the main characters, like, they read minds, so I guess, like, by that logic, like, they're literally on the hunt for the sword that turns people evil.
Mm-hmm.
Two of the characters can read minds and could, like, basically know what's going on with the person at all times.
Dead useful.
They come across, like, a secret organization of ninjas.
Is there any other kind of organization of ninjas, though?
But I mean, like, very emphasis on, like, super secret. Like, most of the members didn't even know what they were doing. Like,
We're a secret society of ninjas, so secret that our members don't even know they're ninjas.
Yeah, like, one of the characters, it's actually the main character, one of the main characters, Jenna, and their brother, Chris. The secret organization of ninjas killed their parents and kidnapped them because their uncle was part of this organization.
Uh-huh.
And so they end up living in, like, this castle, and again, the middle of America. And, like, it's just, like, a bunch of kids, and they're kind of just being raised, and they're like, oh, like, we're just being raised to be, like, ninjas, because, like, why not?
I keep forgetting this is in the Midwest. Which I think is, like, the most, like, somehow the most bonkers part of all of it is just, like...
Yeah, there's definitely, like, it's definitely somewhere in, like, the Midwest or something like that, because there's a lot of, like, plains and a lot of just, like, dead, like, negative space, because a lot of scenes takes place, like, within, like, outside camping, mm-hmm. and, like, you know, there's a good gap in between cities and towns that they're going through. Right. So you could probably draw parallels. Yeah, the Midwest is probably the most...
That makes sense.
Yeah, so this castle is somewhere in the middle of the Midwest, training kidnapped children to be secret ninja assassins.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I just have one last question for you. What are you working on now?
Right now I'm working on... It's called Human Endeavor. It's about a 6-year-old girl who lives on the streets of New York City. Her parents died. She got separated from her siblings in foster care, and she was just like, fuck that, like, not into, like, being part of the system.
Uh-huh.
So she is living in New York with another group of homeless kids, and kind of accidentally starts a gang war between, like, a gang in New York City and her little group of homeless kids. So it's just her trying to prevent both groups from killing each other because of her.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask, did you feel, because when you described that story and reading this one and kind of, like, noticing that you're pretty talented for a 9-year-old, did you feel kind of a little bit mature for your age?
I definitely would say that. As I said, like, I have older siblings. I'm the second youngest of 7, and the age gap between me and my older sister is 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all pretty close. So I definitely feel like I was definitely more mature for my age than not, which I think actually I'm doing it backwards. I was more mature at 9 than I probably am now at 27. I feel like I'm doing this backwards.
You're Benjamin buttoning it. No, that's a good way to live too. That's... All right. Well, thank you for being on, and thank you for so much for sharing the Diamond Sword.
Yeah, Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me.
All right. Bye, Brianna.
Yeah, bye.